From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Okay, what do you remember about your first visit to a museum? Was it a stuffed bear, a Native American headdress with eagle feathers, or maybe a collection of medieval-looking dental instruments? Maybe an original Picasso, a Rembrandt, delicate porcelain from a long-ago Chinese dynasty, or maybe a Civil War musket. Now, these are my takeaways from the Evansville Museum. And these are all items, but there are stories behind every exhibit. Who were the original owners? How did the artifacts end up in Evansville? And who chooses what goes on display and why? Here to answer those questions and tell us more about the mysteries of the local museum is Tom Lonberg, curator of history, and later we'll hear from Karen Malone, the curator of education. So, Tom, welcome, and before we take our listeners behind the scenes at the modern Evansville Museum we see along Riverside Drive, let's go back to the early days of the museum and to the Ladies Literary Club of 1874.
It's amazing. The museum has a long and storied history, but it really does start with our friends at Willard Library, who we still interact with a lot today. Back in that era, the Ladies Literary Club, during the club movement period of our country's history, they were here thinking people should know more about art and history and poetry. And so they are going to have a series of exhibitions at Willard Library that will bring together artwork from Evansville. A lot of that from some of the people that had taken world tours, some of the rich people in Evansville that had the means to collect such things. They'll take it to Willard Library and have exhibits periodically there. And this is really happening in the early 19th, early 20th century. This is happening to a great extent. And we'll see they'll have exhibit rooms. And it'll evolve into an idea that, hey, maybe we should have a permanent exhibit here or a permanent museum here for everybody to enjoy. And at that point, there was a mansion, an old mansion, down at Cherry Street and Riverside Drive, primarily or basically where the Evansville Museum sits today.
That's the Barnes?
The Barnes Armstrong Mansion.
Okay.
Now, well, this is a building that we could utilize for a museum, but what are we going to put in it? Well, in 1904, there's a World's Fair in St. Louis, and some of the countries there were not going to be shipping back their valuables to the homeland.
Yeah.
And so a group of interested Evansville citizens goes over and buys things, things from the Philippines and Puerto Rico and Alaska, and they're shipped here to Evansville and put in that mansion. And in 1906, it opens up. They have a nice reception and curios go on exhibit, and also some things donated from local people also go on exhibit. And it's going to be for about 4 years. And then one of the fun, I don't know if it's fun, it wasn't fun for the museum, but there's a controversy over that structure, its condition.
This is the mansion?
The mansion.
Okay.
And so the Parks Department, not the same entity as today, but the entity that controlled the parks at that point, and it was in Sunset Park, the mansion was, it's deemed to be in bad condition, and it's condemned, and it's going to be razed. And there's objections. There are sermons by preachers here in Evansville saying we need to keep the museum. There was a vote in the newspaper that by a 10-to-1 margin said, let's keep the museum. Let's find a way to keep the museum. There had been even money appropriated, some $5,000, by a previous mayoral administration to repair the mansion. But the new administration said, no, that's not possible. We could spend the money better elsewhere. And so bottom line, the museum, the collection's taken out and put in the old courthouse for storage. And the building, the mansion, is torn down, knocked down.
Now, when the items, these curios, were in the mansion, was it free to the open to the public?
It was. You could go and visit, and the visitation was pretty strong. It was open just a couple days a week, and you could go down and visit the museum and see what was in there. But that collection goes into limbo for about 10, 12 years, and then some of it reappears over at Willard Library, the Vanderburgh County Historical Society of that day, not today's entity, comes together and puts an exhibit room on the second floor of Willard Library. And then by the mid-20s, what is today's Evansville Museum as a business entity is formed. A local attorney by the name of Paul Schmidt brings together a group known as the Society for Fine Arts and History. And the building is going to be called the Temple of Fine Arts and History. So we started out as a temple, so to speak. And it was located on 2nd Street. And not too far from where we sit this morning. And it is going to be in the old YWCA, which is basically two old houses connected together. And so that's where we'll be from 1927. We'll actually opening in 1928 until 1959.
Well, and I have memories of that old building.
Do you?
Well, I think our Cub Scout troop went there, and I just remember the old glass cases. And it was very dark and kind of eerie. But
yes,
they had all these old glass cases with kind of feathered creatures in there and stuffed animals and little kind of little messages there, which you could hardly read, you know, like taped on there. So it was probably kind of crude, but it was a collection.
Well, there's a lot of lore about that building. It certainly housed some of the things we have today. Mm-hmm. The Lincoln cabinet, the Abraham Lincoln cabinet, the Thomas Lincoln corner cupboard. And a lot of our treasures we have today were there. They came to us during that period at our current museum now. And you mentioned the creature, Siegfried Wang, who became our director in 1950. He loved animals, and he would have creatures and snakes and all other things in the museum too, along with, and some of the building superintendent of that period of time, a man by the name of Herman Moore, he didn't like that too much. He didn't particularly like snakes, and they'd escape, and Herman, we need to find the snake, and he don't want any part of these things.
So he had live animals.
Well, he did. Yeah. He did, which he carried over to our current museum too.
Well, interesting about Siegfried Wang, he started out, I think, in Dayton.
He did.
And he was promoting the Dayton Museum, and he had a petting zoo, I think, to bring people into the museum during the Depression. I read that.
Well, the grounds there were suitable to that. He was a great guy, real Renaissance guy, you know, art by background, but certainly interested in science and history. Mm-hmm. There are great stories about him. We have a big pilot wheel that's in the collection of the Evansville Museum off a steamboat, the Billy Cook here, that in its last days was sinking in the Ohio River just near where sort of the Marina Point area of today. It was caught in ice and sinking. He wanted to go on board and get things off of it. And So one of the things they get off is the wheel. And he lamented the fact that they didn't get more off of it because it was sinking and people were afraid to go on board with it. But he said, it floated two more days after the last time we were on it. It's a shame we couldn't have gotten more off.
So he was on a sinking vessel, pulling off what he could.
For the museum, which good for him because we benefit from that today.
Okay. Well, now, I know museums, of course, have been a fascination, I guess, for millennia. Kind of cabinets of curiosities,
yes,
they were called. And I think in the early days in the United States, I know they were described as kind of like freak shows, and people would gather curiosities and oddities and show them off. Of course, P.T. Barnum did that a lot, too, on his road shows. And there's a book out called Stuffed Animals and Pickled Heads, which kind of chronicles that era.
Yeah, I mean, we used to have some of that in the old days. You sort of had this vision of jars of various animals with three heads or,
right,
you know, whatever, six toes and formaldehyde. We moved away from that some years ago. Not that it's not interesting, but probably not what our mission is as far as educating the public.
Now, the word museum, musion, from the Greek, I think musion, a shrine to the muses. So that's interesting. Now, we talked about Siegfried Wang, the patriarch of the Evansville Museum. Would you call him that?
Well, I think
of the modern
there
museum.
There have been a lot of important people in the museum's history. Paul Schmidt, our first board president, who was board president for 25 years. I don't know how he kept doing that for so many years, but he did. Then Sig Wang was our director for 19 years.
And he lived to be like 100 and
104.
My goodness.
An amazing guy, and we owe a lot to him, a lot of our permanent collection. One of his stories about the old Second Street Museum was Sig was very persuasive in getting people from New York and Chicago to donate material to the museum. One of his fears was they'd actually come to Evansville and see it because the Second Street Museum was such a wreck. I mean, not because of what the museum was doing, just because the building was not of the quality.
It wasn't very attractive.
Yeah, that they would have wanted to have their fine art in.
Sure.
But he got it here, and we still have a lot of it. So he was really important, of course. Then in the 1970s, John Streetman was our director for well over three decades and was very instrumental in where we're at today.
Talking to Tom Lawnberg, curator of history at the Evansville Museum. So, Tom, how does one become a curator of history?
What's
your background?
Well, in my particular case, I went to a good local institution, ISUE, now University of Southern Indiana, received my degree in history, and went up to Indiana University to pursue a degree, an advanced degree in history, really with the mindset of PhD and professorship and such as that, but ended up interning at a museum, the William Hammond Mather Mathers Museum at IU, and then really liking that. And after getting my master's degree, started sending out resumes to lots of places, got lots of rejection letters, including from the Evansville Museum. But a year later, the aforementioned John W. Streetman did call me, contact me, along with our current director, Mary Bauer, and they interviewed me. And I got the job some 31 years ago as the first history person on staff.
Really?
Yes.
So looking at all the, thousands, maybe a million items. I don't know how many items you have at the museum.
40 to 50,000, we estimate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, of the historical items, do you have a favorite item there?
Well, there are a lot of favorites. It sort of depends on what I'm thinking about at the moment. I would say one of my favorite exhibits is, because I get to interact with it a lot, is our train, our three-car train, which when you think about a museum, you might think about artwork, or you might think about an arrowhead or something such as that. But in the scheme of how we collect, those train cars are just as much a part of our collection as a fine piece of fine art, a piece of porcelain or whatever it might be. But our locomotive and our club car and our caboose, which were brought here by a lot of interested Evansville folks thinking about it beginning in the 1950s, getting it here in place in 1967. And that, I've always had an affinity for trains since I was a little kid. And so that those three artifacts are certainly among my favorites because of the way people interact with them. And I see little kids that remind me of myself out there ringing the bell and playing on the train.
What about one of the strangest items?
Well, we do have a doorknob that is attributed as to having come from the Eagle's Nest and having belonged to Adolf Hitler. And it is something that a soldier that was from the Evansville area took, and there is actually an affidavit signed by a fellow soldier that he saw him take this from the Eagle's Nest, and that is in our collection. It's interesting, certainly not something we, you know, want to glorify in any sense at all because of, you know, its association, but certainly is an interesting thing that is in our collection.
Now, when people, if somebody has an item, maybe they find in the attic or in a barn or something like that, and they say, hey, this has some historical value. Can they call the museum and you guys check it out? How does that work?
They do. They do call us on a regular basis or email us in these days about things they might have. Primarily in my area, the history area, we collect things associated with Evansville's history in one fashion or another. And so that's how we rather guide ourselves in deciding what we collect or don't collect. But we always appreciate, no matter whether it's something appropriate for us, people contacting us. Because a lot of things can be lost, and the possibility of them coming to us is lost if they don't take the time. And we always appreciate people taking that time to give us a call or an email.
What about the process of verifying the authenticity of an item?
Well, when we do that, particularly if it's an Evansville item, it's a little bit easier to do that because there's usually some marking on it that says it was made in Evansville or from Evansville or of a type of thing that was created in Evansville. Our curator of art, which is a whole different thing than I deal with, she has a background in that where she can certainly look at artwork and determine, you know, whether it is authentic or whether it's something appropriate for us.
Now, do you consider yourself a caretaker as well?
Well, certainly we see ourselves as people that are there for our period of time looking towards the future so that what we're doing now will help ensure that not only our exhibits but our artifacts are taken care of well for the next 40, 50, 60, 70, just going into the future years, so that they're here for generations to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the role of the museum docent who helps spread that message of continuing this historical journey, and also to encourage children to explore the wonders of the museum and what mysteries lie inside. Kara Malone will join us. She's the curator of education. And this is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and we are exploring the Evansville Museum of Art, History, and Science with the curator of history, Tom Lonberg. And joining us now is Karen Malone, curator of education. And Karen, I know you are excited to tell us about the docents who helped tell the story of our past. So who are these docents, Karen?
Well, we could not do what we do at the museum without the docents. We have 40 active volunteers, a part of the Docent Association, and they were founded in 1965 by Gail Begley. And they have been involved in the museum ever since, over 50 years.
Well, who are these people? Are they retired educators?
Yes, most of them are retired from all walks of life. A lot of them are retired educators. We have retired people from the post office, hairstylists, hospitals. Takes everybody to be a docent.
So what's their motivation? Why do they do this?
Oh, to give back to the community. A lot of them love the museum and what we have, art, history, and science. They're passionate. A lot of them love working with children and adults and sharing that.
So is there a special training program for these docents?
Yes, they go through 6 months of training. So they meet 3 hours on a Thursday every week from September through February. And then there's all the work outside of that, the classes themselves, to learn the material. So they learn the content of the exhibitions on display and the artifacts and objects, as well as the programs we do specifically for the kids.
So how often do they volunteer?
That varies. It can be multiple times a week, multiple times a month. Fall is usually our slow time at the museum for field trips. So we might have one or two field trips of a couple, 50 to 100 kids a week. And then in the spring, we'll have one or two field trips a day. Tuesday through Friday, we can have maybe 500 kids come through a week.
So what is your role as curator of education?
A lot of different stuff, and I love it. So I get to work closely with the docents. I help with the training as well as the content development of our programs. And then I'm involved in different aspects such as events, our Super Saturdays. I help with designing hands-on activities in the galleries. So it's a little bit something different every day.
So what's your background, Karen?
I started out getting my bachelor's in geology, and I love dinosaurs, I love volcanoes, but then I realized I loved air conditioning more than I loved being outside looking at rocks, and I'm glad I figured that out early. And I was like, well, you know, I want to talk indoors to people about geology and dinosaurs, and that led me towards museums.
Museum had a dinosaur display not too long ago. I really enjoyed that, and that was a big deal.
Yes, it was really cool to see it. When I went to graduate school, I said, I can go any museum in the country. I just want there to be dinosaurs. But it's funny, there's never been a dinosaur fossil found in Indiana. So I was really happy when we got a dinosaur exhibit to come specifically for us because it was like, all right, dream moment.
So where'd you grow up?
I lived all over. I lived in upstate New York and Ohio and Maryland, and I went to school in Colorado. But I really love Evansville.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a lot of field trips. I know I've been on a couple of them with my daughter. She's a school teacher, art teacher. So I've been on some trips with her and her students to the museum. And what do the students want to see? What excites them?
Oh, it's so great. One of the big ones is Cody the Bear. And then they love waving at Cody the Bear, especially we get little kids preschool and all through college. So the real little ones love that. And then the train museum and the art, seeing the art itself, the hands-on science. Each grade has a different set of programs. So each they'll get to see something different every time they come. And of course, they love seeing the Cook Immersive Theater.
So, yeah, the theater is really one of the gems of the museum. Cody the Bear, Tom, what's the story behind Cody the Bear? Tom Lonberg.
Yes, Cody came to us from Alaska. He's brought down from a hunter who then brought him back to Evansville, and he's been on long-term exhibit at the museum. One of the stories about the bear is that at one point he was not behind glass, which wasn't unsafe for our visitors as Cody was deceased, but it was unsafe for Cody because people were getting souvenirs of Cody's fur and plucking it, taking him home. So for a number of years now, Cody has been behind glass to safeguard him against potential souvenir hunters.
Cody's a large bear.
He's a Kodiak bear.
Yes.
And
yes.
So he's Cody. He is large.
Kodiak, yes. Mm-hmm. Brown bear.
Yes. And I know you have a very interesting village in the lower level of the museum, kind of a turn-of-the-century type of village?
Yes, Rivertown, USA, and mm-hmm. That's been a mainstay of the museum for a number of years now. And that certainly is something people enjoy, looking at how people used to live in the past. Well, enjoy, unless you're maybe looking at the doctor's office or the dentist's office and contemplating what that might have been like. But you can see how people cooked or live in a log cabin or purchased things at a general store, rather the Walmart of the day.
Mm-hmm. Now, Karen, you're a curator of education, and you have all these children coming from all over the tri-state on these trips. Is there certain museum etiquette that you teach these students?
Absolutely. So there's a couple rules we like people to follow. And one is we definitely encourage photographs. Now, some of the objects on display belong to the museum copyright-wise, and some of them are exhibitions where artists themselves have loaned the pieces. So we always ask if people come to the museum to check if they can take photos in a space or not. But when they do, we love it when people share through our hashtag Evansville Museum. And I don't know about Tom, but I love getting on Instagram and seeing what people were doing on their visits and how much fun they were having. We also ask, of course, no flash, because light can damage art and our objects over time. And then, of course, not to touch the objects themselves, because we all have oils on our fingers that will build up and can discolor art and objects. So we ask people to keep their hands in their pockets if they gesture wildly, like I have a tendency to do.
Now, there are certain areas of the museum where people are encouraged to touch things.
Yes, especially the hands-on science area. And I've been helping to create hands-on activities in the art galleries, and I work with Tom to do the history area. So we always hope there's something in each space that people can sit down and play a game or provide their own stories as well.
Now, there was a film, A Night at the Museum, a movie, 2006. That had to generate a lot of enthusiasm, I would think.
We've had discussions about it. Things came alive. What would we see coming alive here at the museum?
Sure.
Of course, one of them is the bear, and you better steer clear at that point.
Yeah. So, Cody.
Yes, Cody. And so those are fun things to think about. And I know we've all had those discussions about this or that. So it did. It made the museum seem like a fun place in your imagination.
Mm-hmm. So now, these students, Karen, they come there, and they probably have the ubiquitous iPhones with them. Put those away?
It depends. We leave that up to for the teacher. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't mind a few photos here and there. Mm-hmm. And but if they're exploring on their own, I often recommend people do one of those face swapping apps. Go in the art galleries and see if you can swap your face with one of our portraits.
Okay,
that's pretty fun.
Yeah, that is fun. So what are the actually? I mean, you have artwork all over the place there. You know, so what really attracts their attention with the artwork?
Kids really, they get a good art education here in Evansville, and I like that a lot. It varies on the kids. Sometimes the landscapes, they like to bring it to life, as well as our still lifes. They'll come up with stories behind it, like, why is this object in the still life? They'll come up with fun titles and the portraits in one of our tours, the Arts Alive tour. One of our docents, Cheryl, came up with this neat activity where it's babies' faces all making different, like, smiling or yelling, and the kids get to choose which baby face matches that emotion that's being displayed in the painting, and they get to do fun stuff like that on our tours.
Now, when I go to a museum, I always like to find out about the artist or the sculptor. There's always a story there, a backstory, and it's usually probably more fascinating sometimes than the artwork itself.
You know, I think that's true. I mean, they have to have their inspiration. They have to know why they're doing it. We have a portrait of James Bethel Gresham, the first American, of course, to die in World War I. That's on a long-term exhibit at the museum. And of course, the artist that did that, Mr. Brewer, I mean, he had his own story as to why he's motivated to paint Gresham, his interest in that. So we'd like to talk about that, too, because it does bring out the more of the story behind the artwork.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do have a Rembrandt, I know, and Picasso. And, of course, there's a famous Picasso that was in storage and was discovered, and it's could be worth millions of dollars, the Jumeau, the glass work of Pablo Picasso.
Well, that is something that the Evansville Museum does have in its holdings. And at this point, our Board of Trustees is continuing to discuss how best to have that be a part of our collection, how to move forward with that. And so that is still an ongoing discussion, and we'll see how that evolves in the next time coming up.
Who discovered that? Do you know?
Well, we always knew we had that in our collection. The attribution perhaps was a little bit misunderstood at that point, but certainly we knew that was in our collection.
Was it in a secure spot? It's glass.
Well, it yes. It was in a, it was in a secure spot.
Okay. Well, I was wondering too. You know, you got to protect all these priceless works of art, and that's a job in itself. Making sure everything is secure and no pests or any kind of water damage.
Well, that is true. I mean, building and grounds and preventive maintenance, all of that is extremely important. We have staff members that deal with that and also outside contractors that come in and deal with our building and being sure to secure in many ways in order to protect the collection.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, museums are very popular. I think there are like, I found out there were like over 17,000 museums in the U.S. And one quote was that 850 million people visit museums in the U.S. every year, and that's six times the amount of folks who go to any major league sporting event. So museums continue to be very popular. We have a lot of museums right here in the Evansville area, and I think we're very fortunate to have all this selection.
Yes, we are, and we try to partner with our fellow museums here, with the Evansville World War II Museum or the African American Museum.
Sure.
Or the Wrights Home and the LST and Angel Mounds and the many others that are here. We certainly have a good collection of museums and also a good collection of knowledge amongst the folks that operate the museums, and the people of Evansville are fortunate in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I know I was at the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, Russia this summer. And, you know, just to see, well, you're overwhelmed, I think, by going to the museums like that.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have when you go to a museum? How would you best manage your time at a museum, Karen?
Ooh.
When you go to a museum, how do you do it?
Some of us are label readers, some of us aren't,
yeah.
Which is funny to say even as a curator.
Yeah, I'm not much of a label reader, to be honest. That's kind of bit different for a museum professional. I like to play with all the stuff. So usually I get on a website and say, all right, what's new, what's coming up? And if it's a city you're going to, you're only going to visit once, you definitely want to hit the highlights, make sure you get all those moments. But if you live here, like in a city, like if you live in Evansville, we have stuff all the time that's changing. So I'd say, you know, you can do it very strategic. You can come in for an hour, hour and a half, and then you can come back 6 months later and do another hour, an hour and a half, because there's going to be something completely different.
Well, I think that's the whole idea is to change things up, change the exhibits, because you want people to come back. Now, we're talking to Karen Malone, the curator of education, and Tom Lonberg, the curator of history at the Evansville Museum. We're going to have more of our discussion coming up. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. If you're just joining us, my guests are Tom Lonberg, curator of history at the Evansville Museum, and Karen Malone, curator of education. Okay, guys, we're talking about some of the gems of the museum. Karen, what are your favorite pieces at the Evansville Museum?
One of my favorite pieces has to be the cat mummy up in our Humankind Gallery. And I think it's so cool we have a mummy right here in the museum.
Mm-hmm. And do you know much of the history of that mummy, where it came from?
You know, I know how we found out it was a cat mummy, because if you look at it, it's kind of a nondescript bundle of bandages. And you're like, what is that? Is that a bird or is that a fish? And I believe several years ago, they took it and they got it x-rayed. Mm-hmm. And I had the chance to meet the daughter of the person who x-rayed it. And this must have been 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, my.
When they x-rayed it. And she remembered it because she was a little kid when that happened. And they took it in. And we have a copy of that x-ray, which we pull out on our tours. And that's how we know it's a cat.
And Tom, what about your, what are some of your favorite, maybe non-historical pieces at the museum?
Well, I enjoy a lot of the artwork. Being the history guy, that is not in my wheelhouse as far as knowledge, but I certainly enjoy the opportunity to walk through those, not only appreciate the artwork, but appreciate the effort of people like John Streetman and Siegfried Wang and bringing that to us and the legacy they left the museum.
Now, obviously we have works of famous artists, world-renowned artists at the museum, but we also have the works of regional artists, and we like to showcase those, don't we, Karen?
Yes, multiple shows every year from the Mid-States exhibition and the Working Together exhibition we do with the Arts Council, and of course, we've been doing for over five decades the High School Art Show.
Mm-hmm. And that involves students from where?
Local high schools all across the region. They submit their artwork. It's juried, which means there's a judge who decides which pieces are selected in the show. I believe between 100 to 120 pieces are put on the walls, and it's an art exhibition.
Now, earlier we were talking about the importance of keeping the museum ever-changing and changing exhibits. Tell us about the process of choosing an exhibit. How does that work?
It is a process that goes through the art committees, the history committee, and the science committee, and we have a conceptual committee organization at the museum whereby those committees work with the curators in those areas. We talk about it at a curatorial level within the staff initially, and then we will take ideas to these committees who will then determine whether or not we're going to pursue those. And so it goes to that process to the committee level, which again is made up of community people. Then it goes to our executive committee and our board of trustees, all of which are community members and volunteers. So it goes through many levels before an exhibit is actually approved, and we're usually working a couple of years out on what's upcoming.
And then it's important to market that exhibit to get people to see it.
It is. If no one comes, we've not really done what we were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Now, the wide variety of paintings, of course, you have the medieval works and religious works, icons. And so these items are very important. And you have security there, people that walk around, make sure people don't touch and take the photographs and that. So is there a... When they're not on display, how are they kept secure?
We have a collection storage facility where they're secured and environmentally.
That's wondering about the environmental.
Yes. Our collection storage area is environmentally controlled for the artwork, and also it's very secure as far as safety itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have these retired gentlemen, I think there's the security guys that kind of walk around there. And they're also kind of docents in a way, because I know they're very informative if you have questions.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. And they love the museum. It's great. It's definitely a community museum.
Mm-hmm. And I know you have special events at the museum where you invite the public in. And of course, that's the whole idea, is to get people involved.
Yes. One of the ones I've been doing is the Geek and Comic Con. So we've been doing, it's like a Comic Con. We have comic book sellers and artists and graphic designers come and do panels. And it's really showcases all the great geek talents we have right here in the tri-state.
And that's an annual event.
Yes.
So the museum, the concept of a museum has been evolving, would you say?
Well, I think so.
Yes. I think it's not just the objects and art, although that's an essential part to it, but also the community stories behind it and also the community engagement, being able to add your own perspective.
So what's on your guys' bucket list on visiting museums? What museum would you like to visit, Tom, that you haven't visited?
Well, there... Any time I see a rail museum or an aviation museum, those are the types I like to see. I've never been to the Air and Space Museum portion that's out by Dulles Airport. I've been to the one down in the mall, but none one by Dulles. I'd like to see that. Mm-hmm. That certainly is one I'd like to see in at some point.
Mm-hmm. Karen?
Probably the Exploratorium in San Francisco. It was the first hands-on science center, and it really changed how museums view guests' interaction.
Okay, very good. And what are some of the ones that you have visited that have left an impression with you?
Well, I like some of the museums just in our own state. I really like the Indiana State Museum, and I'm an Indianapolis 500 aficionado, and so I really enjoy the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum to a great extent. That's one of my places that I visit. Anytime I have a little free time in Indianapolis, I'm looking at race cars, sitting still.
What are some of your favorite museums, Karen?
Probably the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. I remember they had a pyramid from Egypt right there, and I remember that was pretty cool when I was in high school. And then probably the Denver Art Museum, and they're really leaders in how art experiences can be hands-on and interactive.
Now, I sometimes these artifacts from Egypt, they'll be traveling. You know, these incredible treasures,
yes,
world treasures, will travel. And how does that work? How do you, I guess, lobby to get those items?
But there are traveling exhibit services whereby you can basically, for lack of a better term, rent an exhibit for a period of time. And depending on the exhibit itself, it can be affordable or it can be well into the six figures to have an exhibit here for a period of time. And so museums can do that. And they're also especially curated exhibits that might be available to an exhibit, to a museum at one point or the other.
Well, tell us about the Cook Immersion Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, Karen.
So it's a state-of-the-art planetarium and theater, and we're the only one in our, probably within 100 miles, to have this. So it's a really quite the gem of the museum and Evansville. And besides the educational films you can watch, which a lot of them are from National Geographic, and we've had stuff on butterflies and sea monsters, we're going to have a brand new one, which is going to be about Mayan archaeoastronomy, which I'm really looking forward to. But you can also play video games on an 18-foot screen.
Really?
Yes. You can rent it out, have one of the coolest birthday parties ever.
My sons did that and loved it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There have been weddings and bachelorette parties, you know, playing video games. It's pretty cool.
Well, you have this incredible location right there at Sunset Park, overlooking the river, and I know you like to showcase the river, and the river is prominent in the museum with the historical artifacts.
It is. In MTRAC, or the Evansville Museum of Transportation Center, we have a section that talks about Evansville's relationship to the river, and some of our historic images show the river in the relationship of Evansville grew from the river.
Sure.
It's why we are here, and because Hugh McGarry and Robert Morgan of Evans believe this is a good spot for a city, and that tells our story, at least the beginning of our story.
Well, I like the old photographs of all the paddle wheelers pulling up in front of Evansville and loading all their goods and everything, and then the wharf workers. And, of course, then that evolves into the shipyard of World War II with all the LST production.
Yes, certainly if you were sitting where we are today at WNIN, the riverfront, we would be looking out at a myriad of paddle boats, steamboats, if we were here 120 years ago, 140 years ago. And certainly the Evansville Shipyard, with its over 19,000 employees, mm-hmm, was the largest employer in our city's history, and the river was, you know, that's why it's here. Without the river, obviously, we don't have a shipyard.
And, of course, we enjoy the benefits of the river, and also the river can bite you. We've had some major floods, too, that have affected our history.
Well, in one of the most popular exhibits we ever had, which predates my time at the museum, was in 1987 at the 50th anniversary of the 1937 flood. We just had hundreds and thousands of people coming down to see that exhibit. Of course, there are a lot of people alive that still remembered it. And at another anniversary, just a few years ago, we had a speaker speak about the 1937 flood, and we packed our major gallery where we have talks in, and people just have a real keen interest in that natural disaster that really did devastate the city back in 37.
Oh, definitely. Now, Karen, what do you foresee in the future for the educational programs at the museum?
We're going to keep growing our field trip options we have. We've been developing with the docents really great interactive, like our Arts Alive program, our Mystery at the Museum program for third and fourth graders, where they have to solve a mystery. And the docents have lots of great ideas of how we can keep going, involving our history, our train, science, lots of neat stuff. So
you're talking about mysteries at this museum. Have you ever seen any objects that kind of baffled you, Tom?
Objects that have baffled me? Well, there are things
to get the provenance of it, maybe?
Well, we've tried to figure things out here and there over the years. This isn't really baffling, but one of the most fun I think I ever had with an artifact was back a few decades ago, we were offered an outhouse. And, you know, you think, well, why in the world would you want that?
But a working outhouse?
We haven't tried it out.
Okay.
But
it had been?
But the story behind it was I had a couple of mentors over the years that said, if you can ever get one of those WPA, Work Progress Administration outhouses from the Great Depression,
yes,
you should get that because they were groundbreaking. They had concrete floors that kept you from getting certain diseases you didn't want to get. And also they're used during the 1937 flood here in Evansville when the water and sewer weren't working. They'd set them over the manhole covers. And so one early morning, we drove to northern Vandenberg County, and the friendly donor put it on a trailer, and we drove very slowly to the Evansville Museum. We've not had a non-exhibit yet. We haven't quite found the right venue for it, but we do have it because it is an important piece of not only Evansville's history, but really of that era, as funny as it might sound.
That's great. I don't know how to react to that one. That's a good one. That would be an interesting display.
And just to be totally clear, it's a one-holer. It's not a two- or three-holer.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Now, careers in the museum. There are stores, people that restore artwork. What are some of the other career opportunities at the museum, Karen?
Well, I think we've kind of hinted at the collections side of things, and those are often the people you don't see who are working behind the scenes to make sure those art and objects are being taken care of. As well as there's, we have accountants, we have marketing department. So I think if you have an interest, there's a way to connect it with museums.
Mm-hmm. I know the restoration part of it. I've seen work in Washington D.C. and repairing the flags and the gowns of the first ladies and stuff. People doing that. I mean, meticulous work that mm-hmm. they do, and it's incredible what they can do and restore these things.
Yes.
And we do some minor conservation. We do more preventive conservation. Being a true conservator, that's a real long course to get to that. And our museum is not of a size where we'd have somebody on staff that's a professional conservator. When we need art or history items conserved to a huge extent that need a lot of expertise, we will farm that out to a professional outside of our walls.
Now, the Evansville Museum is considered one of the major attractions, tourist attractions in this area. What about people from outside the area visiting the museum?
I think that we find the general reaction is, wow, this is in Evansville. This is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't expect it. I don't know what they're expecting from Evansville, but I guess they're not thinking that we're going to have a museum that is so substantial, covering art, history, and science with a myriad of educational offerings for them.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a log of people that visit from different countries and states?
Yeah, when you come in, we'll ask your zip code, and it's always fun to get someone from who's overseas because mm-hmm. it's our computer doesn't know what to do with that. So we kind of keep a list of people.
So what are they excited to see at the Evansville Museum?
Well, it rather depends on what their own personal interests
sure.
are, but I think a lot of people, they're sort of interested in where they're at. I know for many people who visit museums, they like to get a sense of place and what the community's about that they're at. So some mm-hmm. of that's good. But I think they're also very interested that we have such a fine collection of artwork, that they're astounded that we have these masterworks. And we have, of course, very talented regional artists also that they can view.
Mm-hmm. Now, this collection, I mean, it just doesn't happen overnight. These are have been in the collection for decades. And you still get new works?
We do, both in art and in history, and in science to a lesser extent. We don't collect quite as largely in that area based on who we are, but things still do come to us on a regular basis.
What would you consider to be the most valuable piece if you could put a dollar value on an item at the museum? I know some things are just priceless. You couldn't put a dollar value on them.
Well, is from my perspective, being the curator of history, you really it's more a matter of its place in history as opposed to its monetary value. We have a portrait of Robert Morgan Evans, you know, the city's namesake, which monetarily I don't know, but historically, you know, it's extremely valuable because there's a guy that our city's named after.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things that I deal with, not usually thinking about money so much as its importance to our community.
Mm-hmm. Now, Karen, we were talking about the things that really impress you at the museum. Now, when you have friends that come in and visit, what do you like to show them at the museum?
Definitely the immersive theater, because that is so special. And our art collection. I love to be able to say, oh, this is Renoir, and this is Rembrandt, and this is our George O'Keeffe, and here's the two Picassos. I like to do that, especially in that tone of voice of, it's just right there. And then our history collection, the Lincoln Cabinet, I think is pretty special.
Now, tell us about the Lincoln Cabinet, Tom.
We have two Lincoln Cabinets, one that was built by Abraham Lincoln, our 16th president, which he made when he was a youngster over in Spencer County, and came through to us many decades ago, and we're really fortunate to have that. He didn't make a lot of those things. That was not where he was headed. Of course, his father was a master carpenter, Thomas Lincoln, and we have a Thomas Lincoln corner cupboard, which is very, very well done. It's a beautiful piece in great condition, so both of those are real prizes within our museum and our long-term exhibit at the museum.
And what about Civil War memorabilia? I mean, that's very popular.
It is, and we do have a number of things such as that in our collection. We're not currently really emphasizing the Civil War. We've had a lot of Civil War exhibits over the years, and we have some items within our collection. We have the jacket of John Messick, who is the youngest drummer in the Union Army, and the jacket's tiny, and we've had that on exhibit periodically through the years. And so the Civil War, and certainly we do have a number of things in our collection from that era.
Mm-hmm. Now, the museum, of course, ever-changing and worth exploring once again. I mean, people, you want them to come back and everything. And so how do you do that? How do you get them back?
Well, I'm always doing a Super Saturday, which is our family day, which we have nearly once a month. So even if you think you've seen it all, definitely come back, because we're going to have different activities, and they're always themed around a new exhibition we have going on, or a new theater show, or just something that we thought was really cool from an art history science standpoint. So there's always an activity you can do.
And when my wife and daughter, we go to different cities. We went to Copenhagen. We went to a lot of European cities over the summer, and we go to the museum. They head right to the gift shop. I mean, that's probably their first stop, if not their second stop at the museum. So tell us about your gift shop at the museum, Karen.
Well, it's really neat, because we have local artists, so you can support local artists by shopping at our gift shop. And then we have little science kits and great things for kids. That when the school field trips come, they love to take a look at it. It's also a great place you can do your holiday shopping at.
And I know at the museum, you can there's like a – is that a sculpture garden? Or what is that area behind the museum that faces the riverfront? I know you have some sculpture back there.
There are some historic pieces there. There's the Lady of the Grand, which is off the old Grand Theater that was here in Evansville, basically where Fifth Third Bank sits today. Looks like the top of the Statue of Liberty, and she is back there. And there are other architectural elements back there from historic Evansville cities.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any breakage at the museum? Has anybody dropped anything?
Never.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to touch the really expensive stuff.
I know some things are on pedestals, and it always kind of freaks me out. And I keep thinking, oh, my gosh, I don't know. There's got to have to have been an accident.
Well, the human element obviously comes into things. But we are as careful as we can be, both from the perspective of how we handle things. We have a collections manager and a registrar who are very much always reminding us how careful we need to be, and they're excellent in both what they do, but also just protecting the artifacts from visitors. And that's not to say anything negative about visitors,
sure,
but you're in a place and you're not familiar with it. It's easy just not to be oriented as to where you're at. And so we try to give the artifacts in a position where they are safe from potential bumping or touching.
So how is the museum benefiting from the renaissance of downtown Evansville? We're getting more people downtown.
It's been awesome. I love having all the restaurants right down in Haney's Corner, as well as the First Fridays, because we're definitely seeing people come over. And, of course, I enjoy going over as well. And just we like to go over there for lunch. So it's definitely a destination. You can do a lot of things in an afternoon or an evening downtown.
And I think the addition of the LST 325 to Tropicana is like a walkway right there of attractions.
I think it'll be wonderful. We have done some cooperative things with the LST, and we hope to increase that. That is just, you know, as a person that really enjoys World War II, that is the ultimate World War II artifact.
Sure.
To have that here in Evansville is just so amazing. And to have it then, as you say, just a walk down the riverfront will be really good for both our organizations.
Mm-hmm. And you got the pagoda right there in the middle.
Yes, mm-hmm. Another historic structure, the first use of reinforced concrete in our city, I do believe. And so it's there, and so it's great to have this, the Convention Visitors Bureau as our next-door neighbors.
Well, Tom Lonberg, Curator of History, and Kara Malone, Curator of Education, thank you so much for sharing with us your expertise on the Evansville Museum, some things that we didn't know before. So thank you so much, and go check out the Evansville Museum. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Coming up on the next 2 Main Street, shedding new light on two canine rock stars in the tri-state, Evie and Vandy. These Labrador retrievers really don't shed that much, but we do hear from their paw parents, Susan and Steve Harp. Evie is the older of the two mascots for Keep Evansville Beautiful, and Evie is a survivor. Well, it's good to see Evie. She looks like she's doing well. And I know she had a serious health problem a few years ago, and we thought we might lose Evie.
Yes. Her heart did stop on really? The operating table. She had a tumor on her spleen, and luckily it had not ruptured, but it was at that point it was ready to rupture. We rushed her to the All-Pet Emergency Center, and they had to do emergency surgery, and it was a tedious surgery, and during that time her heart stopped. Mm-hmm. Therefore, she had a stroke. Mm-hmm. So she was down and out for a good 2 months. Mm-hmm. We had to put her on a feeding tube, so it was very traumatic. But she bounced back.
Oh, I know. And she's back on the circuit.
Oh, yeah. the way we really knew she was back as being Evie was that she went outside to pick up litter one day. So we were like, we thought she would never pick up litter again, but she surprised us all.
Evie, Vandy, Steve and Susan Sharp, and Julie Welsh with Keep Evansville Beautiful, all my guests in the doghouse next week on 2 Main Street. We'll learn more about the anti-litter campaign, the hidden meaning in the dogs' names, and how we can all step it up to clean up the environment. And did you know that both Evie and Vandy are from Canada? We'll hear how they ended up here in a neighborhood in a wildlife sanctuary on Labrador Lane. And my favorite question to their paw parents, what are Evie and Vandy's favorite treats and toys? To Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. And our interviews are also online at WNIN.org.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Evansville Regional Airport, hundreds of one-stop worldwide destinations on 3 major airlines to 5 hubs, and non-stops to Orlando on Allegiant. More at flyevv.com.
To Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport. You're listening to 88.3 WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, Owensboro.